Welcome to Talking Book Publishing.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Book Publishing. I'm Kathleen Kaiser, your host, along with Adana Moriarty, our co-host. And today we're going to talk about a subject that most authors, really don't understand or don't think is important, and that's author branding. And when I say branding, I don't mean a logo or your book cover or something like that. It's far more important, especially when you're promoting or you have a book to sell. So first off, why don't we start with a definition? Adana, how do you define author branding?
I think there are two parts to author branding. I think some of it is logo, color scheme, book design. But I also think that it is your representation to the world and to your readers. I mean, it's more than just color, logo, you know, that stuff. It's the perceptions and how your readers perceive you. So it's a way for your readers to identify who you are and what you represent. Good branding is something that through all of your platforms, through your website, through your social media, through the signage that you produce for book signings or festivals or whatever you're going to do, that all of those things meet into the middle in your genre, and give the world a perception of what they can expect from you.
Absolutely. Because they, you know, as we've said many times in the past, today, readers want to know the authors.
100%.
You are central. Who you are and what you stand for and what you believe in is really important to your readers. And that's why using social media, having a website, all of those things expand your coverage, because you're up against a million other books every year just in America. So you have to stand out. And to stand out, you have to develop a following, and that what they are following is that brand. Who are you? What do you talk about? What do you find interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I just read this statistic that says 89% of consumers say they will purchase from a brand that they follow on social media. And I mean, obviously that's towards products, but books are products. So if you look at yourself as a small company, if you're self-published, especially, and you look at yourself as a small a company, and your books are products, that like, if you aren't branding yourself properly, you're losing out on 89% of consumers. That's a huge number. That's almost 100% of sales. Yeah.
That's a very strong number that you have to keep in mind, because, you know, the objective is to sell books, and you have to get outside of many times your original comfort zone. We all have to do that. And if you want to succeed, you've got to do it.
Yeah, you have to do it. And you have to be willing to put in that time and effort. And if you're trying to go the traditional route of publishing and not self-publish, publishing houses are looking for that author brand already to be established. I mean, they're going to look at your social media. They're going to look at the aesthetic and the things that you post, and see how it relates to, you know, that manuscript that you're trying to get published. If you just put in your manuscript and hope and pray, and you haven't done the legwork leading up to that, you're not going to get picked up.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons I'm still a very big proponent of having blogs, because blogs really get more personal, and that's how people really get to know who you are.
Yeah, I think blogs are great. And I think you have to be really thoughtful with blogs. If you're a fantasy fiction writer and you're writing about what you made for dinner, like, those two things don't go together. So I think blogs are great. And I think there's a number of ways that you can do them, whether it be kind of flash fiction in your blog posts, you know, you're writing 1,000-word little stories, 600-word little stories, or you're writing about the process of writing fiction, especially nonfiction. You can add in a little more lifestyle kind of things because nonfiction is a really broad genre. And, but I think also, I mean, if you're a true crime writer and you're writing blogs about what you made for dinner, like your readership, you're missing the mark. So I think that blogs are great, but you can't only do blogs.
Oh, right.
If you're only posting blogs on your social media, you are not going to gain followers because the basic rule of social media is to have five subjects you like to post on. So it'd be your weekly blog or your bi-monthly blog, whatever it is. People really like animals. You could post about your animals, travel. And then they say statistically only about 20% of your social media should be promotional. People don't like to be sold to on social media, but if they like you and they follow you, they'll buy from you. If you're only posting blogs, you're going to lose people. If you are only posting promotional stuff, my book signing, my book, nobody's going to want to hang out with you.
Yeah, they will not. They'll unfriend you.
Yeah.
I think one of the best people I saw ever do this, this was a number of years ago, but she was right up there, she writes cozy mysteries. And she has this whole persona around being Italian. And so she goes to Italy, you know, every couple of years, but she takes hundreds and hundreds of photographs. And then she comes back and she starts posting like she's in Italy right then. And here's my dinner at such a place, or here's the view from the restaurant overlooking the Arno, and different stuff like that. And it made people follow her. She had thousands of followers, and she was sitting in her home typing these. She wasn't out and about doing it, but she figured out how to do it, and people loved her, and they loved her books because who she was kind of her character in the books. Plus, she had animals. She had a dog in every single story, lots of them in the blogs. You know, there's the cat people and there's the dog people, but, you know, there's huge audiences for both. But I mean, that was really, she established a brand. It was solid. It was really, really solid.
I will say people love travel, especially the writer's life kind of thing, you know, like as an author, it's already glamorized, even though it's a really hard job. But there's this perception that we as authors are something that the rest of the world is not. So travel and that from the writer's perspective is something that goes far on social media. And I do, I think your brand is part of your personality, and that ties into all kinds of things. I mean, your personality is going to dictate what your website looks like. It just is. I mean, you're not going to create a website that you as an individual don't like. So your website, the hub of your entire author world, is going to project to the world who you are as a person anyway, because aesthetically you like certain things, right?
Absolutely. There are three kinds of mistakes I think authors make, though. That I saw an article recently about four of them. I agree with three of them, because the fourth one can be shot down, though it really won't. But it's like, well, who's you write the book for? And people say, oh, for everyone. No, that is, you don't know who your audience is. Everyone will never read your book. Everyone, right. You know, you have to know who you are, and you need to create a brand that targets your audience.
Well, and people are genre specific, and even in genre, they're, you know, subject specific. Like if you write nonfiction, not everybody likes nonfiction, or not everybody likes lifestyle nonfiction, or true crime nonfiction, or I mean, there's so many subgenres of like the nonfiction world, but same for fiction. If you're a horror writer, you are not writing for everybody.
You know, absolutely not. Right.
If you're a romance writer, you're not writing for everybody. Like, I don't read romance really. Occasionally, but usually it's on accident. I don't read horror. I don't like to be scared. I don't read horror, but there are lots of people out there who read horror. So, you know, I mean, if you write historical fiction, not everybody wants to know history. Like, you know, it's too nuanced. There's so many little threads and things that weave through a historical fiction. Historical fiction is my favorite genre. And then sci-fi and dystopian. So yeah, you are absolutely not writing for every person on this planet. Not everybody is into, and that's okay. Like, you shouldn't want to write such a generalized book that everybody would read it.
Well, you can't write a generalized book. Nobody will read it.
Yeah.
Because it's not grounded in something. It doesn't have a point of view. It doesn't have, and I don't mean writing point of view. I mean, the story has to have a point of view. You have to be trying to achieve something. Your protagonist has to have a goal.
It has to have a feel as well. Yeah. So, I mean, to kind of jump back into branding and that, you know, part of what you are creating is who you are, right? So it's your perception, or what you want readers to perceive you as, and also what your genre is. So, you know, part of what you're creating as a brand for people to recognize and what to expect from you, some of that is aesthetic. Because if you are a horror writer and you have a book with flowers and daisies and people hugging on the cover, they're going to think that's a romance novel. They're not going to know it's horror. So, I mean, I do think that it's two things. It's an emotional connection and it's an aesthetic connection that have to come together and meet inside of the genre that you write in. Now, what happens if you write in different genres?
Well, that comes to, for you to be able to interpret that into a website that shows the variety of what you're doing. But not a lot of writers write in a lot of genres, at least successfully. They start in one and build a following and then branch out.
Yeah, I mean, and then they're still known for whatever they were the most successful in. So I guess my advice to people starting out would be to not jump too far out of your home genre. And I think that there are writers out there, because we always have stories in our heads, you know. They might not always, if you're a sci-fi writer, you might not always have a sci-fi story. But my guess is there's some underlying thread in your style that is similar. And that's what I would advise picking up on in the branding journey, is to really examine the difference, if you're writing in different genres, where you're kind of the same.
Well, and also in what appeals to you in a couple of genres will appeal to other people, but there's a thread. There's a thread. You're not a disjointed person. You know, there's a thread that leads you from one thing to another thing.
Right, right.
And that also gets back to finding out who your audience is and targeting them.
Yeah. And I think that also, I mean, on a branding journey, if you are just starting your branding journey and you have four books out and you didn't think about that prior, which isn't uncommon, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, we're not here to shame anybody. you know, I think that it is then you, the branding is you, like your branding and trying to find an audience. And it might be different. Like, you might have to create separate social medias, one for, you know, the two books that are sci-fi and the two books that are nonfiction lifestyle. Like, you know, you might not be able to marry that into one social media and one website and one promotional material. Like, it might not be something that you can do, and that's okay. You can brand them separately. You can have two different things happening.
Well, you don't want to confuse buyers, because if they're confused, they won't buy. They'll stop and they won't do anything.
Right. I agree with that. And I'm just saying, I mean, if you already have done that, you know, having two separate hubs because you write in two different worlds, it might be for online purposes, you know, it might be the direction that you need to go as you build, and then you can kind of bring them back together into one happy home, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's important too to think about, if you're writing a series of books, your covers need to be similar.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you can't have one cover look like this and one cover look completely different. I mean, they can be different colors, because who wants an entire series where they're all the same color? But I would stick to fonts that are similar, imagery that's similar, but differentiates from book to book.
Well, let's take the most successful author in the world, J.K. Rowling. Okay. Harry Potter plus, plus, plus. And yet when she finished that series, she tried to write a whole something else. And it was like the public rejected her. So then she put it out under a pseudonym, and it started selling because she's a really good writer, and she promoted it. But then when it was revealed it was her, so many people got upset because they couldn't put the two together. Well, she had separated them.
Right. I mean, her reason for doing that is a little bit different than our conversation right now. But it
happens to everybody.
Yeah. Hers is a political thing, which we're not going to get into on the podcast.
Yeah, but she wasn't political in the beginning. 20 years ago when she started writing the other books, it wasn't that way. That was her Twitter feed.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, I mean, the reasoning for the pseudonym, you know, the non-de-plume, as they like to call it in the writing world. I think that it's really important from a branding perspective. You know, when you look at high-end skincare, like, let's bring it to products that aren't books. When you look at high-end skincare, their label is almost identical across the entire line, right? And their website matches that label or the feel of it. And their promotional material matches the label, right? Which sometimes is simple, sometimes is elaborate. But the thing that marries all of it together is the thing that can work for you as an author as well, which is, from afar, you want people to be able to recognize you. You want them to be able to recognize your inch thumbnail photo on Amazon. You want them to notice your book cover or your aesthetic on signs at festivals when you're out on the lawn and there are 1,000 authors all around you, like at the LA Times Festival of Books, if you're, you know, you ever want to do something like that. You want your authors to recognize you in Barnes and Noble when your book is on a table and it's in a table among 15 other books. You want somebody to be able to pick up that book from sight and know that it's yours. And I think it's a really important part of this discussion, which is, before you get to book cover designing, before you get to really, you know, involved in your social media, before you get to your website, you need to take a step back and think about who you are and what you want everything to look like out there in the world.
Because once you start with it, you can't change it very quickly. You'll have to evolve it. So yeah, you've got to be comfortable with it and feel that it represents you.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something that I work with my clients on. When we start building a website, I do a 45-minute discovery phone call first. And then I give homework. So I have an idea of what they like and what they don't like, because most people don't know. You know, when they're going into a website or social media process, they don't have any idea. They do, but I have to ask the questions to pull it out. Because when you ask them point blank, as an individual who doesn't work in design, you generally don't know what you like and what you don't like. And I think that as a person, if you're not going to hire someone like me that can help you with branding, you need to sit down and ask yourself questions and look at other people in your genre, look at other book covers, look at other websites, look at the bookmarks and, you know, postcards that people send out. What do their newsletters look like? How do they curate their social media, especially on visual sites like Instagram? Because some people are really, really stylistic on their Instagram. It's not hodgepodge. It's really thought out, especially fiction writers. It's called the Instagram grid. Their Instagram grids are styled, they're branded. So when you land on, when you've read their book or when you look at their Instagram and you're going to buy their book, all of those things meet. And
what do you mean by that? Give me an example.
Of what?
Of what you mean by the grid meeting.
Okay, well, I'm going to use one of my fellow Corvids as an example, Stephanie Kemmler. Her Instagram grid matches her books. Everything about it is vampire related. It has a sultry kind of dark night feel to it. I mean, some of her grid is she's taken a picture of herself from headshots and broken it up into individuals. So when you look at it, it's 3, 3, and 3, like in a square, but they're individual pictures that make a big picture. I mean, some people are really creative with their Instagram, and not everybody is, and not everybody wants to put that energy into it. She specifically really does, but the feel of her Instagram, when you look at her book covers and you read the inside of her book, they all go together. The reels that she creates all have this sort of vampiric feel to them. You know, so I think that when you're thinking about everything on a whole, you have to really think about, like, what am I writing and who am I and what do I want to project? I mean, like, Stephanie loves vampires. So, I mean, I'm guessing it was an easy thing for her to, and was probably doing it before her book ever came out, that was her kind of aesthetic anyway. You know, the kind of gothic modern vampire thing. That's my advice though, is start looking at people in your genre who are successful and look at all of their social media, look at their websites, look at their book covers.
You don't have to dream this all up yourself. You can look at it's out there. There's hundreds and hundreds of examples.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be complicated. It does not need to be some complicated endeavor, but it needs to be thoughtful and it needs to be thought through and it needs to be something that will resonate with your reader group.
Well, here's the thing. Here's kind of an exercise. What is, you know, as an author, what is your favorite genre? So who are your favorite authors? Go look at what they did. Look at people that you like and you respect and you read, because that's what you want from your readers. You want them to enjoy your reading, respect you, and want to read it more.
Right. One of the questions that I ask in my homework assignments to potential clients is for them to give me websites that they love and give me websites that they hate. And I think that it's important when you're thinking about aesthetic is to also look at things that you don't like. Because if you're working with a cover designer, you need to be able to tell them specifically what not to do when they're creating a look for you, especially if you're writing a series and it's going to span across books. You have to have a really good idea as the designer of what never to do. Right. And if you don't know that, you could create the first book with an idea of the second book cover and unknowingly put something in that cover that the author, your client, hates.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also works that way with like just the choice of fonts that you use, because whatever you're putting into your book covers translate into your website.
Right. Or vice versa. I mean, your website, if you're working on multiple books, your website could be the thing that you start from aesthetically and then pull from that to bleed out into the book covers. I mean, I like to design from a book cover that's already created, but it doesn't always happen because you might be an early bird kind of person who's creating a website before you have a cover for your first book. Which is great. Like, I think that's great. Cause I mean, a website design can always be modified.
Well, it needs to be updated regularly.
Right. Right. And I think that, I mean, one of the things that I run into often in kind of a branding conversation is this is going to be my only book. That's, you know, that's a common thing I get. This is going to be my only book. I want everything to be about the book. And yes, people are buying the book, but they are buying you, you know? Right. So if you create everything around a singular book, you've written a memoir or an autobiography, and you're like, I'm 80 and I'm never going to write anything else. I understand that. But I also think, like, if you want that book to sell, you have to remember that in this day and age, book consumers especially are after who you are as a person, not just about your book.
Absolutely.
Especially in the nonfiction world. I mean, in a fiction world, you know, it could be a little bit looser in the who you are. You could create a persona to project to the world and not be that at home. Nobody's going to know because they're buying fiction. But if you've written an autobiography or a memoir, they're going to know right away that what you're projecting out into the world isn't you.
Well, that's the, and then they'll feel cheated, and right. You don't want that. The last, because as that, you know, it's the old tale, a lie goes around the world before the first word of truth is spoken, because people will know that you weren't being honest and genuine.
And even in this day of age of an online presence, like we all have, I mean, even people who don't hang out on social media, I mean, we all use the internet. Word of mouth is still your number one selling over everything else. So if somebody picks up your book because they follow you on Instagram and they really like it and they like the cover and, you know, they're talking to their friends at coffee about this book that has this beautiful cover and, you know, and because of the cover, they bought it, like that friend is going to buy it. And then, you know, or all of the friends, if there's four of them at coffee, you know, like it still has that kind of multi-level marketing thing, right? Like where one person starts and then it's four and then it's eight and then it's 16. And so that is part of where branding is important, because the next time the person who wasn't the one in the bookstore that goes to find you, if your next book doesn't look anything like your first book, they're going to struggle to find you.
Yeah, it's, well, that's part of the whole keeping it tight and keeping it adaptable, because each book will have a different personality, but the underlying base, who you are, because you wrote it, is the same. And it's how you've adapted and taken different things to write. I mean, look at Stephen King. He has an amazing persona.
Right, right. And everything about him, even his house. You know what I mean? I mean, he lives in Maine. He writes about Maine. His house is kind of spooky from the outside. You know, everything about that guy fits his genre of writing.
Yeah. Well, it's like James Patterson. I mean, he's got what, 20 people writing books for him now, and he puts his name on them, but they all have a feeling. And he goes out and does these lifestyle things because people want to be in that kind of world. And that's where he's writing at.
Yeah. I mean, like Diana Gabaldon does that with her Facebook. I mean, she writes about daily life. She writes about the writing process. She does daily lines where, you know, she takes like 2-3 paragraphs and puts them up on her current working piece for the next book. You know, she talks about her kids and her grandkids and how she retreats to her family's cabin in Flagstaff. When she's in her final edits, like her final revision, she will go spend like two weeks to 2 months up in Flagstaff and finish a book. You know, I think that when I talk about looking at successful people in your genre, if you write horror, you need to start following Stephen King on all platforms, look at his website, check out his Goodreads. You know, I mean, even if you don't like Stephen King, you don't read Stephen King, you pick guys in that category that range from best prolific writer of all time, to small indie published as well. And see what they're doing, because I will say, as a non-horror reader, the horror community in the indie world especially is doing awesome things with their interior layouts. I mean, where one page is black and one page is white, and they have illustrations at the top of, you know, chapter pages. And I mean, it is not a traditional open your book to white page with black text and, you know, the top says the author's name and the book title. It is creative beyond creative. It's not just writing. They have a whole world inside of that. And I think that it's important to look at all of that, so you're current with your genre and how that applies to you and how you resonate with your genre readers.
It has to be coherent. It has to be cohesive,
right?
And pulled together. And don't be afraid. You're not expected to do all of this. You can read and learn things, but reach out and talk to people. Like being part of WPN, we do lots of stories about things like that in the newsletter. And even more, if you're a member, in the market update. We're constantly telling you about trends and things that are going on, things that are going on in the business. Because you got to remember, publishing is a business and you're walking into a new world. You may be older and have spent your life in aerospace or as a professor or something. Publishing is a business and you need to know the business you're in.
Yeah, I think one of the conversations I have most with my clients who, you know, are usually publishing their first book, not always, but usually, is that when they went into it, they thought the process of writing was hard. And then they got to editing and they thought the process of editing was much harder than writing, because it is. And then you're done editing and you have to cross this line into self-promotion, into what that looks like and how you do that. And it is harder for most writers to cross that line from writing and editing into marketing, because writing and editing for a writer comes kind of naturally, right? You sit in your room, you know, you either open the curtains or you close them, depending on who you are and what you write. You drink your wine or you drink your coffee or you guzzle water bottles. You listen to music, like you put yourself into your own little world when you're writing. And when you are in marketing, you step out of your own world and into a world of people that you don't actually know, that you hope are going to buy your book.
Yeah, it's changing hats is the way I put it. You get all of the creative part done, and that's really even into the production part of the book, in the cover, design, if you're self-publishing or something like that. That's still maybe 30%. But the biggest, most important part is marketing, because nobody's going to know who you are if you don't have stuff out there. They're
what
just
is the
not
statistic that you always say, like marketing versus writing in the process of book creation?
Well, usually it's 20% writing, 5% editing, and 5% production, and 30% marketing. I mean, yeah, 30%, 50% marketing.
50% marketing.
Yeah.
So I have a quote from the Writing Cooperative on if you wanted to go a traditional route and how this whole conversation and branding pertains to it. A publisher wants to know the author is committed enough to invest a few hundred dollars on their brand and that their blog and social media posts actually resonate with people. It's in your best interest to take the lead and plan to successfully sell books to your own audience by creating an online brand.
Right.
So that was from the writingcooperative.com, 5 reasons an author's brand is more important than their book. So, you know, when you think in your head, as someone listening to Kathleen and I discuss this, like, oh, you know, my brand will create itself because my book cover or who I am, it won't. And if you're trying to self-publish, it's extra important because it's hard to sell books as a self-published author. It just is. If you're going small indie house, they're going to require some of the same things that one of the big 5 publishers require at a smaller scale. Like the big 5 now require ridiculous social media followings for, you know, brand new authors that have never written anything. And I have no idea how authors are supposed to get the social media following that the big 5 houses want from you. But if you want to go the traditional route and you're trying to go for a big publisher, and you really need to sit down and think about what do I want that to look like?
Yeah. Absolutely. I keep saying absolutely a lot today.
Okay.
I'm agreeing with you though. But because nowadays, the last couple people I've worked with that have publishers, their advance is to go 100% into marketing. I have a fellow with Simon & Schuster, and they expect him to do all the marketing.
You know? Right, right, right. I mean, that is
a sad reality.
That's something that has changed in the last 10 years, I think. You know, 20 years ago, when you got an advance, it was a living advance to finish your book. In the last 10 years, it has changed from like 80-20 to 20-80, where you can keep 20% of the advance and 80% has to go into marketing, to now, where like they'll publish your book and they put their imprint stamp on it. And, you know, it has their own distribution because they send out catalogs to bookstores and whatever. But when it comes to marketing, that you're on your own.
Well, and the reason for that is that they've been bought by conglomerates and all they're looking at is at the bottom line. I mean, you do not get an advance to write your book unless you're doing something really different in nonfiction. Fiction, you have to have not only written the book, you have had it professionally edited or they won't even look at it.
Right. Unless you're already established. I mean, if you're already established and you've already been a bestseller, then you are getting living advances. But as you know, as a baby author, and I say baby author, whether you're 25 or you're 85, like if you're on your first book, you're a baby author. You're just learning how to navigate this world. As a baby author, hoping that you're going to get an advance, it doesn't happen anymore. I mean, it used to be that you could take 20 pages and submit it, or you could submit a concept and a publishing house would pay you to write it, right? Even as a new author, you would go pitch an idea like people do with movies and TV shows. You would pitch the idea. They would love the idea. You would have 20 pages so they could see how you wrote. And then they would give you an advance. So you could go home and sit in your room with your wine and your coffee and your music and your curtains half open and write the book. And now you have to submit a full manuscript.
Right. Well, let's see. Let's wrap this up here. What Would you say are the three most important things for an author to consider in their branding?
One, who you are and who your audience is, because you are projecting yourself to them. What is your aesthetic, from logo to book covers to website to social media? And three, to make sure you research the genre of your book, because you are pulling information from other people who have already been successful in that genre. They've already tapped the market pool.
Right. I think the biggest mistake new writers make trying to become authors is they don't read their competition. And it's like, oh my God, if you don't know what your competition is doing, you know, how many of the bestsellers in legal thrillers have you read in the last 2 years? Not what you read 20 years ago, because that style of writing doesn't even count anymore. You have to have read several books in that genre in the last 2 years of successful books, books that make the New York Times bestseller list, to know who your target market is.
I totally agree with that. And I think that it also has to be those bestsellers in your genre that aren't all James Patterson's and Stephen King's, right? Because they have a very specific formula that they have been using for decades, but they have had a readership following for decades. So, right. You know, the smaller, newer authors who might be on the New York Times bestselling list, but have one book, also look at those.
Oh yeah. With all of the book awards that come out, they usually pick specialty books, you know, first time authors in that who have done really, really well. Read those.
100%. Because the Nora Roberts of the world that have, you know, 100 books, romance books out there on the market, her stories might be different, but when you read her books, there is a formula for each one that matches the one before. The stories might be different, the protagonist, the antagonist, the setting, whatever, but you know, those bestsellers that have been writing books for the last 30, 40 years that are still bestsellers, their readers expect something from them in every book, right? But it's the new guys that break past those ones that are Stephen King and James Patterson and Nora Roberts and Diana Gabaldon's that have broken into that list of bestsellers on their first book. Those guys are special.
Yeah, they're the ones that have come up with something different.
Exactly.
Something different.
So those are my three is what I said. Mm-hmm. And I think that, as you said, you know, it's really important to research your genre in every way. Reading, aesthetically, how they present themselves on social media, all of it.
Well, and also, if you read some of the newer writers in your genre who are being successful, and it's not the top selling books on Amazon, it's the top selling books, like with the New York Times.
Right, right.
On Publishers Weekly. You know, go to the trades. Those books are the ones, then look at what their websites go to. Go and look at their social media. These are the new ones that you're up against, because you know if they've had a bestseller, they got another one coming and another one. So you need to look at who they are and what they've done. And that can give you a feeling, you know, start to see who, some of them you may not like at all, but that's because it's not your aesthetic, as you said. Find the ones that feel something like that you can relate to. And that way, if you work with someone to help with your branding, you can give them examples of what feels comfortable to you.
And I was just going to say, I mean, you can always hire somebody to help you with branding. you don't have to navigate it on your own. In any situation in this book world, you're going to have to be willing to put some money into it. You know, whether it's a couple hundred dollars or a couple thousand dollars, you have to decide what your budget is for that. But it's always beneficial to reach out to somebody who's an expert in an area that you don't know about. Some of us are great at researching and learning it on our own, but the more successful people have a team that help them.
Right. The thing that I find most confusing to a lot of people is that, as I said earlier, this is a business. You don't start a new business with a zero budget. Okay. You are setting yourself up to fail. So you need to set aside, maybe while you start writing, start saving a little on the side, putting money away for this new business venture, because publishing a book is a business venture and you have to put money out front.
You can also crowdsource.
Well, that's true too.
I mean, you know, if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you want help with your book, you can always crowdsource on crowdsourcing websites. So I think that there's a wealth out there in the world that you can pull from if you're brave enough to, and get help in making sure that your book gets the visibility that it needs to get, or
reach out and like Adana said, build a team. You need a team. Nobody expects you to know how to do all of this. Nobody expects that of you. You need to have a team that you build and you trust, because they'll deliver the results that you need.
Wait, the big five houses expect you to know how to do this.
Well, yeah, that's why you have to have a team.
I know.
They expect you to think of this as a business, and you've put together your business team. Well, I think we've sort of gone into author branding a lot, and I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it and picked up something. If you have any questions on this, contact Dana or I with them. We'll gladly answer them.
Absolutely. And if there are any subjects that you guys want Kathleen and I to just talk back and forth on, email one of us and let us know, because we're happy to do more of this style of podcast and be able to share our knowledge of the publishing world with you all. So if there's anything specific that you would like to hear us talk about, just let us know. Send us some emails.
We'd love to hear from you.
Love it.
Okay. So that's it for Talking Book Publishing today. And our next one is going to be with H. Mitchell Caldwell, with his second book in his award-winning legal thriller series. The new book will be called Cost of Deceit. And that's going to be out on the 30th of March. So until the next time, thanks for joining us.
Talking Book Publishing is brought to you by Writers and Publishers Network, a resource for writers and indie publishers at every level, and offers tools to be successful in their writing career. Writers and Publishers Network.com.